everybody. This is Charles, and you're listening to Bringing It All Back Home podcast. Coming at you with another review analog combo style episode. Today we're going to be taking a look back at one of the more obscure, perhaps, or just neglected lenses from Nikon, or Nikon as a lot of us say in the USA. This one's the 35mm 2.8 pre-AI Type K, which has been converted, in my case, to AI. So yeah, I want to get into a 35mm lens kind of episode, inspired by something I just casually tossed out there in my last episode of the podcast, where I'm like, you know, if I ever wanted to really get better at discovering how to really bring out the 35mm point of view, maybe I should just start shooting with 35 nonstop for at least a month. I don't think I could possibly do that exclusively because I don't have a 35 for my digital camera. But I've got at least three different 35 lenses for my film cameras, and I do have another rental on the way. So yeah, I think I can continue this sort of side project of shooting with 35. So today I want to take a look at this combo. Again, this is the Nikkor 35mm 2.8. And yeah, my version was inspired by a single photo that was posted to I Dream of Cameras. So I want to kind of go into how I discovered this and more. So hang in there. I'm going to have a gulp of something to drink, and we'll get started. So a couple of months ago, at least back in April or March, I Dream of Cameras was posting something that caught my eye. This was a photo Jeff took of a photographer outside of the photo store somewhere in Paris. The photo store was called the Odeon Photo, and the photographer's name is Christopher Nisperos. And instead of a photo of Chris and his camera, it's just a close-up of the photographer Christopher's very nicely beat up and brassed Nikon FM2 with the very traditional black gaffer tape covering up the logo and the name of the camera. But what caught my eye was there was a lens attached, which was sort of the big focus for me. I wasn't that, you know, blown away by the fact that he had a black brassed FM2. Because, yeah, whatever. But it was like the lens. I'm like, look at this lens. This is a really modest lens. You could just tell from looking at it that this was not some modern wonder, some modern marvel. This looked just like a pretty ordinary old 70s lens. So I basically did a screenshot. Even taking a look, because what's unusual about this shot is you can see the serial number really, really clearly on the lens. So yeah, Nikkor 35mm 2.8. And then the serial number, which I'm looking at right now, you know, is 799. What is it? 400. So I decided to do what one does. I plugged it into a website that has all the Nikon lenses, the Nikkor lenses serial numbers, and I found out that this is one of those mysterious K lenses. And I was intrigued, and I just started doing a search and saving a search on eBay, and eventually I did find one, and to my surprise, mine was converted. And what was interesting was that yeah, the listing for mine, I guess you could say, yeah, it did indicate it was converted because it described it as a Nikon AI Nikkor 35 2.8. And I was able to, of course, from the ad, you know, check out the serial numbers and find that they did match the mysterious K version. You know, So yeah, I was intrigued. I'm like, let me grab this K lens. Like, is there something about the K lens that I should know? Yeah, so if you're curious, I'll also leave a link to a cool little short video from the Grace of Westminster guys on YouTube. They have a nice kind of more visual way of describing the journey from the original glass for the Nikon stuff, what I suppose is either called pre-AI or non-AI, to the versions that are more typical that you'll see around, the AI or AIS. And then there was this stuff in between that was a short-lived versions of the glass called the K lens. And that's what mine is. So mine particularly, the production year is 1975. This is, let me see. Am I on the exact correct? Because this is showing the F2. Hold on. So I think maybe I'm looking at the wrong one here. Nope. Yep. Okay. Hold on. There we go. No, sorry. Mine is 1974. Mine's 1974. So I had clicked the wrong link. That was the 35 F2. This is the 35 2.8. Yeah. So mine was 74. But just in general, these K lenses were this in between kind of lens because they were introducing new elements, particularly the focusing ring and some of the multi-coding. So they were introducing what the lenses would begin to appear as or look like starting the mid to late 70s and through the 80s. So they had really shifted away from the original non-AI or pre-AI lenses. So this is that intermediate period. And my particular one is still very, very much similar to the previous generation, meaning it's six elements and six groups. Again, the focusing ring is now rubber. That's one way you can really start to figure out if it is a K version. And mine was converted, which is kind of interesting. You know, mine's a converted version of it. So I wonder if there really are that many around that still are using the non-conversion, you know, the ones that, I don't know, did they still have K lenses that are literally still non-AI? But yeah, mine is essentially an AI kitted version of the K. So I think, if I understand this correctly, what would typically happen would be that you would just send them back to Nikon and they would do the proper AIing for you. And that's one of the things they bring out really, really well in the video, the Grace of Westminster. They kind of show you visually like what to see on the back of the lens to determine if it is going to have the indexing thingy, you know, so that the more modern cameras can start taking advantage of that stuff. But anyway, yeah, so is mine special in any way? I don't think it really is, other than they do appear to have changed the elements and groups. So the original ones had, were a slightly heavier lens. They were like seven elements with six groups. And then they cut it back to this more modern design with six elements, six groups. And then they cut it back even more by the late 80s, cutting it down to five elements and five groups, which kind of makes sense because you could see how that was sort of the approach with a lot of Nikkor glass to bring down the weight and to find a way to get the optics just as good with less stuff in there. So that's a little bit of the backstory. What's more intriguing, though, is this whole idea of where the heck did this word K come from? And that's where I believe I've read that they don't really have a full confirmation that this is not a letter that was used necessarily by Nikon, Nikkor. According to this article I'm reading right now, Nikon introduced the K lens in 74, recognizable by the rubber focusing ring, replacing the previously aluminum extruded parts that had to be precisely machined and coated, and that these newer 74 lenses were introducing some faster lens designs and possibly some more newer coating, reduced weight, and that, yeah, supposedly your fingers wouldn't get as cold in the freezing temperatures with the rubber ring. But really, yeah, it was a cost savings scenario. They were able to use less materials, blah, blah, blah. And quality, according to this article, remained key. And it's a great example of a Japanese phrase called Kaizen, beginning with the letter K. So that there's one theory that the Kaizen is the K stands for Kaizen. I'm beginning to believe maybe it's more Kafkaesque, you know. According to one other person's, thing I found on the internet, they're basically saying they still have no idea why this series, this brief 74-75 series, is known as the K-type. According to some sources, the K description itself is believed to be derived from the Japanese Kanochi Teki or Tiki, loosely translatable as modern or contemporary. However, within Japan, this reign is simply known as the New Nikkors. So it seems unlikely that the K designation is based on a Japanese word. So yeah, there's that whole mystery. If you do have a thing for Kafka, you may remember that, some of his protagonists are just simply named K, you know? So who knows? Maybe there's like a Kafka-esque thing that drew me into this mysterious lens. Anyhow, no. You know, there's nothing mysterious about it. This is just a workable workhorse of a very average 35, maybe, or maybe not. Maybe it has something else going for it. Hence my fascination with this pro photographer named Christopher Nisperos banging around with this old FM2 in the streets of Paris, and he's got just a plain old, not the, you know what I mean? Like, he's not using a 1.4. He's not using an F2. He's just using a very battered-looking Nikon FM2 with a good old AI 2.8 35mm. So, yeah, that's where I figured I would go. I would continue this hunt for maybe reprogramming my brain to start seeing how to fill the frame, I was rhyming here, with a 35 point of view. And again, I keep repeating this on almost every podcast, but yeah, I like 50 because it's just so quick to fill the frame. I can fill the frame almost, you know, so instantaneously. And then, yeah, start to look for angles, start to look for layers, start to look for how my edges are doing, how my leading lines are, boom, 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 boom. And maybe if I get lucky, I might actually have a half-decent composition. And even better, sometimes I'm not even thinking at all about those things. I'm just moving in and out and finding the shot because 50 is so ingrained in the way I work. I have none of that when it comes to 35. 35, I still feel like, ooh, what is this thing? Why do I have so much space? What do I do with the corners? Especially when I go vertical, I'm like, what am I doing with all this space? Like, do I need all this in my shot? You know. So anyhow, I finished two rolls, and that's what I want to talk about today, just a little bit of an analog combo. Use two different cameras in at least three different locations. The film was the same, and the lens is the same. So yeah, this is a little bit of anatomy of a shoot or two, a little bit of an analog combo. The first camera that I used with my AI lens was my Nikkormat FT3. And if you guys are into the Nikkormat thing, you may know that the FT3A takes modern batteries. You don't have to hunt down any of those Mercury suckers. And the FT3 version, am I getting that right? FT3? Yeah. The FT3 version of the Nikkormat handles AI lenses with no problem. No problem at all. With one exception, though, you still have to kind of make sure it's aligned. You have to make sure that the, you know, as you turn your aperture, that it is also turning the camera, that the camera is also moving with the little thing pops out of your AI lenses, that the indexing essentially is paired properly. And I have had this issue before where, yeah, you know, I don't use the Nikkor glass as much as I used to. I don't use the Nikkormat as much as I used to. There was a period there where I was just focused in on the pre-AI lenses with the earlier Nikkormat, the FT2. And that thing would just stay on there. Like, that was where you had to do the whole, rabbit ear dance where you have to kind of turn it one way, then turn it back the other. With the FT3 and the AI glass, you don't, but you still have to make sure that your indexing guy is working along with the aperture as you turn it. And the first time I put it on, you know, I'm going out for that morning light shoot. I'm like lucky that my brain is working even just a little bit. Had just a very small amount of coffee, hadn't had everything yet. And I take my first shot. I'm looking at the meter through the Nichromat going, what isn't working? So yeah, had to take the lens off again, realign it, and then boom, got some fantastic results. In my opinion, that Nichromat, I just got it off, you know, the eBay without any real fuss. It is in such good condition. You know, like sometimes you just luck out. And I don't understand why. You know, there can be so many cameras that you sweat about, you obsess over a little bit, you can't wait for them to work well, and you get it in and you're just like, yeah, well, it works. It works. Seems to be working. Whereas the ones you don't obsess about, you don't even spend that much money, like this Nichromat, it sounds and performs like it, A, has barely ever been used, or B, it has just been CLA'd. Incredibly efficient. And yeah, every time I use it, I'm just stunned at the working condition of this camera. Metering was just dead on. And that leads me to the second thing I want to introduce. In addition to using my T-Max, which I did switch back to the T-Max 100, which is my favorite T-Max, used up all the 400. T-Max 100 is just the film you can rely on to find out how great can this combo get. You know, like if you can't get sweet results using T-Max 100 and one or two developers, which I'll talk about in a minute, something's off with your camera. Something's off with your lens. Like T-Max should produce ridiculously great results, sweet resolution, wonderful focusing or sharpness or acutance, whatever you want to call it. Love that film as a sort of, okay, you know, if it sings if it does a great job at T-Max 100, then yeah, you've got something workable at hand. So what I wanted to do, as well as the 35 angle, was I wanted to get back to using a filter currently to fit my Nikkor glass. I just have one filter, which is the slightly deeper yellow, almost orange. This is the Tiffin, as I said, just mentioned, deep yellow 15. Just like I think it looks really more like an orange filter, though technically it's still a yellow filter. So yeah, the yellow filter. So that's stronger than the typical number 8, you know. So this guy is a little bit stronger. And what I was really curious about was like, okay, I want to use the filter more. I want to get, obviously, put this on my 35K lens. But one of the things I always kind of bugged me a little bit about the filter thing is if you are going to use the filter thing on a non-metered camera, there's always that chance that simply opening it up a half a stop or opening up a full stop or opening up a stop and a half. It's always a chance that that may not work for every single shot. And there is, I think, some reasoning behind that, you know, just because on average, it's going to need an extra stop of light. It's not always true. It really kind of depends how what's in front of the yellow filter, I believe, is the way it works. Like how much blue, how much yellow, how much green, whatever, depending on the filter you're using. Either way, I think, okay, let's put this together. Let me combine the 35 millimeter lens, the yellow filter, the T-Max, with a Nikon camera that can meter. And that pretty much boils it down to just two in my collection right now, two analog cameras. So the first one I started with was the Nichromat. And yeah, everything started coming together. Had some beautiful, beautiful morning light in November. It was one of the cooler mornings. It was one when we briefly had a kind of a 2 days of a finally a frost. So yeah, I was excited. Kind of got out there, started doing my typical spots near where I live that can play with shadow and something photogenic, you know. I usually go to some locations that do feature some older architecture, and I kind of know where that morning light, roughly the golden hour morning light's going to hit. With the Nicromat, it's one of those pull the, as if you're about to rewind or advance the film, you just pull it out just a little bit and the good old needle meter, you know, will start to work. Let you know if you're in the middle, if you're in the plus, if you're in the minus. And pretty much what I was doing, especially on the Nicromat, is just changing the aperture, unless I absolutely had to go, you know, to a completely different shutter speed as well. So yeah, that's the one drawback of the Nicromat. I'm not a huge fan of how you change the shutter speed. The shutter speed is kind of clunky. You have to, at least in my opinion, you kind of have to take your eye off the ball and hold the camera up and start turning the ring along the bottom of the lens, or it's technically the bottom of the body, but yeah, that's, they had to make something difficult so that you were getting a discount on this camera versus at that time, the extraordinarily expensive Nikon F. Anyhow, had fun with that. The metering seemed to be going well. The shoot seemed to be going well. And as I speak right now, I'm kind of just looking at some of those shots. I'm very, very, very happy with the selection I'm looking at. Everything's coming together with these shots. The yellow, deep yellow filter number 15 is adding just a little bit of filter-ish contrast, you know, and I don't know if that is that, does that make any sense? In other words, like last episode, I was talking about the Zeiss lens I had rented, you know, definitely a lens with that Zeiss T-Star. I think of the episode I called it T-Aster, I believe it's called the T-Star coating. That is a different kind of contrast. Like that's just sort of like, it's punchy, you know, it's a punchy contrast. It just takes it up. There's no need to have any kind of filters. Whereas there's something about the yellow filter. It brings it up, but I think in a much more subtle way, depending on what you're shooting with. I had relatively a punchy light to begin with. It was not a cloudy morning. Anyhow, I was really happy with some of these walk-around morning shots. The camera performed perfectly. The film advanced wonderfully. What I also love about that manual, very manual tactile Nicromat and this lens is that that combination is so freaking affordable. The lens that I'm referring to, I believe I paid $80, got it from Japan. The Nicromat, my God, the Nicromat FT3, you can get for under $100 as well. Sometimes really, really cheap, but yeah, just what a wonderful combination of metering without a mercury battery, with a normal battery. And just you sit there and look at your needle move up and down, and you adjust what you want to adjust. You decide if you need more, you know, stops of if your f-stop needs to be smaller or bigger, and then you decide if you want to change the shutter versus the aperture. Really happy with the T-Max development. This was still, as I mentioned, using from previously, I made a fairly big batch of ID11, otherwise known as Ilford's D76. And I did make sure to use this as 1+1, even though I would have loved to have used it as stock as well. Probably would have looked just as good as stock. My problem is my ID11 is a little too warm, you know, right now. And for whatever reason, even though things have cooled down. So when I mix it as a 1+1, I'm typically throwing some ice cubes in as I mix the water, the 1+1, and then I scoop what's left of the ice cubes out. And yeah, it's a quick way to bring that temperature down to 20. And I'm finding I'm getting, you know, sounds cliche, of course, I'm getting more consistent results not using the warmer D76/ID11. I'm just trying to keep it around 20. Anyhow, yeah, really happy with the results. Analog combo number one, Nicromat FT3, the AI or K converted to AI version of the simple 35 millimeter Nicromat from the mid or earlier 70s, 1974 on. Just a simple 2.8, not focusing on, oh, how great is the blur? How great is the bokeh? No, this is just a walk around street lens, you know, or a walk around landscape lens. And yeah, thumbs up. It was just very, very successful shoot. Did it increase my hit rate when it came to the 35 frame? I'm definitely seeing where I'm starting to get a little bit better because I am doing it more consistently, beginning with, again, that rented Zeiss lens. That was I think I did 4 rolls with that rented lens. Now I've just completed another 2. I kind of want to just keep shooting 35 millimeter and all my analog stuff as much as I can, possibly just ride out the rest of the year. So maybe instead of a 1 month goal, I'll give it at least a 2 month. And again, not exclusively, I still may dabble in some 50s, especially on my digital, but this is going to be a focus and see, maybe I could turn a corner starting 2024, feeling a little bit better or understanding better of how to fill a frame with that slightly wider normal view. All right, moving on. The other combo that I was working with, I was really pleased with because it totally made sense. My F100. So I put the lens, you know, again, this converted AI lens on the F100. At first, I'm like, well, can it take? Does this camera support AI? And I was a little concerned because there was a time where I think when I got into digital, that the digital could only work with the AIS lenses. But no, of course, the F100 had no problem with the AI. I believe the metering is going to default, even if you don't have it set to it, it's going to default to center weighted. So I just turned it to center weighted also, and I would basically left it on aperture priority. And I had the yellow filter, my deep yellow slash what I think looks orange, my deep yellow 15 on there. And I'm thinking, well, this should be real good because, you know, the F100 is essentially this is like when, you know, this is a late 90s wonder comparable to the last great. If the F100 can't meter through that filter well, what can? You know, so I figured, yeah, the metering should be perfect. And the metering was great. The metering was absolutely great. You know, so I'm looking at the shots right now. This one kind of went on a couple of different locations. It started out when I was still out at Batstow. And then it finished up with a bike ride I did just 2 days ago. Kind of a late day bike ride using, again, the 35 millimeter. The yellow filter, T-Max 100, and the ID 11 1+1. Took some shots out of Batstow. That came out okay. Nothing too fantastic. But yeah, got some really lucky stuff with that late sun on just last Sunday, you know, just 2 days ago. Got some skateboarders out at Back Sav, a local skateboarding spot in Atlantic City, which is awesome to work with. And did get some great light on one of the dingier motels, not far from where Atlantic City High School used to be. Really happy with that. This stuff all got scanned and developed between yesterday and this morning. So this is all still very fresh for me. I don't have quite that perspective yet as to how many of these are true keepers, but just within the immediate look, very, very happy with that. So yeah, it was fun using both setups. I think I'm a little bit more inclined to keep using the F100. There was something about the viewfinder. The viewfinder in the F100 was just perfect. You know, it has like it. I never struggled in any way to get that focusing. I also really love the fact that it loads the film so quickly. The only drawback is it does not have the ability when I rewind to keep a leader hanging out. So it does require for every roll, since my method of developing my film is to always have a leader. It's a long story. It's a bulk loading thing, but either way, it's pretty minor. The other thing is I have to make sure my batteries are good. That's another one where, you know, is the F100, you know, looking good for battery life? So yeah, but other than that, terrific combination. So happy with keeping a filter on a more modern Nikon camera, knowing that center weighted metering is going to just kick ass. Also having the ability to have a really clear and clean and bright viewfinder, which is important too, because as you get to these stronger filters, you know, you may not see the dividing line between what's in focus and what's not as easily because, you know, you're through the lens there as what it would look like without a filter, you know. Anyhow, really, really happy with this simple combo. Rediscovering a great 35 millimeter lens. Can't wait to shoot with this combo again. I think I'm going to switch, though, again, right for the next two rolls. Got my bulk roll ready to go with some classic FP4. The humidity in my apartment has been dropping steadily. So I do have a humidifier, but it doesn't quite do the goods. So yeah, when I did develop the last two rolls of T-Max, kind of left them hanging up to dry for overnight because I was working that day. And then did the reverse re-roll so that I could take out the curl. The only drawback with that method, again, is that you fix one major problem. Now it will scan flat. Like, there's no excuse if your film doesn't, if you still use a scanner like me, if you're not using a digital camera, if you don't have film that's lying flat, you're effed, you know. But yeah, reintroducing the other curl when you backward roll it and let it sit for an hour or two, you're also reintroducing dust that was absolutely not there the first go around. So a little bit of a pain in the butt having to look at your image and going, oh my God, there's like at least, I don't know, 50 tiny dots of dust that just absolutely would not have been there had I been able to scan it normally. So that's why, as we head into the colder months, I'm switching to FP4. As much as I absolutely love T-Max 100, and I still have at least 7 or 8 rolls left, I may go against my instincts and use it depending on what the shoot is. I'll most likely be using FP4 for the rest of the winter because I just love that. I don't have to deal with that stuff. FP4 is a wonderful, versatile film. I still like T-Max a little bit better. But FP4, if all the conditions are right, you can get wonderful results. And I adore FP4 in a medium format. But yeah, for the smaller format, T-Max can't be beat. But also, I can't be hassled to keep doing that reverse curl stuff. Anyhow, that's the show for today. Hope you guys all stay tuned. Thank you so much for listening into the podcast. And yeah, if you do want to reach out, I am on Instagram as well as Twitter. Again, my name is Charles, and I'll talk to you guys there later next week.